The Christian is confronted in this world by many sights and by many sounds as well. There is the beauty of God's creation that we can admire and wonder at. Even though it is marred by sin, there is still much to wonder at and to admire in the handiwork of God. And it only reminds us of what must it really have been like in its original fashion, before this world was marred by sin and the fall took place in Eden's garden. What wonder and splendor there must have been in this created world. But we can certainly admire that and look upon it with the physical eye. We can also look upon and see God's wonders that he does among the children of men. His work in that sense. He is always at work, working out his purposes and bringing to pass his sovereign counsel. And when we see that and observe it, again, we can admire that and marvel at it and rejoice in it that God indeed is in control. There are also, however, many things that a Christian observes that may vex them and annoy them. When they seek to walk with God in this world, there are many things that will indeed trouble them. In many ways, the believer's experience in this world is going to be reflected more and more in Lot's experience in Sodom, because it tells us in 2 Peter chapter 2, verses 7 and 8, that Lot was vexed with the filthy conversation of the wicked, for that righteous man dwelling among them in seeing and hearing vexed his righteous soul from day to day with their unlawful deeds. And that is going to be the Christian's experience more and more in the world. The Christian who wants to walk with God is indeed going to be vexed with the filthy conversation of the wicked. The word seeing in that statement with respect to Lot, that righteous man dwelling among them, seeing and hearing. The word seeing there means a sideward glance. The word hearing means a rumor or a report. It suggests that whatever Lot saw or heard, it vexed his soul. But in the midst of all of life's sojourn, pilgrimage, the Christian is ever encouraged to look upwards. We are not to look downwards. We're not to look outwards. We're certainly not to look inwards. But rather, the Christian is to look upward. We are to lift up our eyes onto the hills from whence cometh our help. And in lifting up our eyes heavenward, we are to pilgrimage then through this world, practicing this principle that Paul here lays out for us in verse 7, walking by faith and not by sight. If you remember Hebrews 11, verse 1, now faith is the substance of things hoped for, the evidence of things not seen. So it is the mark of walking by faith that we are looking for things, hoping for things that we have not yet seen. That is going to be the mark of the living faith of a child of God. Where faith truly exists, then it is going to be marked by this characteristic, this general characteristic that is here in verse 7 of this chapter, walking by faith, not by sight. True faith believes the certainty of things we have not yet seen. And that's what I want us to think a little bit about this morning, particularly when we think about, well, what is it to walk by faith? Well, I want us to think particularly of that point. It is looking upon things that we have not yet seen with a physical eye. Because that's what is discouraged here by the second clause in verse 7. It's not by sight, not by physical sight. The Christian is not going to judge what is important, what is valuable, what is true and upright and godly. The Christian is not going to judge what those things are by physical sight. They're going to judge in a different way. And that means, Christian, then we're going to be different to the world. We're going to have a completely different mindset. The difference could not be clearer, because the second clause of this statement is how the unconverted live. They live by sight. They want to touch it. They want to feel it. They want to handle it. It has to be something physical. It has to be something that's tangible, or else they're not interested in it. That's how the unsaved live. But that is not how the Christian lives. Paul says that. And we're going to think about this in other places as well. Not only Paul, but he's writing under inspiration. That would be sufficient, but we will find that it is mentioned in other places in the Scriptures as well. So there's going to be a complete divergence between the Christian and the unbeliever. There's going to be a difference. There's not going to be somewhere that we're going to be in the middle somehow, and we're almost like the world in this way. It can't be further apart. The unconverted live for things that they can see physically. The Christian is not going to live like that. The Christian's going to live by faith, and living by faith is that we believe and we look for things that we have not yet seen. We're going to have our eye on those. So, thinking about what it is to live by faith, or walk by faith as the term is here, I want you first of all to consider that the Christian is to love a Savior they have not yet seen. The Christian is to love a Savior that they have not yet seen. Now in this chapter, Paul tells us that he knew Christ after the flesh. Go down to verse 16. It says, "Wherefore henceforth know we no man after the flesh, yea, though we have known Christ after the flesh, yet now henceforth we know him no more." Paul had that great experience, great privilege of actually meeting Christ on the Damascus Road. That was why he was able later to say, "I am truly an apostle." In 1 Corinthians 9, in verse 1, he says, "Have I not seen the Lord?" That was one of the qualifications to be an apostle. That's why there's no apostles today. There cannot be any apostles today, because one of the qualifications of being an apostle was that you had seen the risen Christ physically. So Paul tells us here, "I have seen Christ in the flesh. I have seen him risen." Paul may even have seen him prior to his death in his public ministry, because he was up at the school of Gamaliel in Jerusalem, and no one knows exactly how long Paul was there, but Paul may well have seen Christ in the flesh prior to his crucifixion, but he certainly saw him in his glory afterwards. He saw him risen. But you and I do not see a risen Christ physically today before us. None of us have seen the risen Christ, and none of us will until the day of his appearing. But if you turn over to 1 Peter chapter 1, and to verse 8, you will read in that verse, "Whom having not seen ye love." 1 Peter 1, verse 8, "Whom having not seen ye love, in whom though now ye see him not, yet believing, ye rejoice with joy unspeakable and full of glory." So Peter is picking up on this very point of loving a Christ that you have not seen. That's what it is to walk by faith. We're loving a Christ that we have not yet seen. We believe that one day we will see him, as Paul did in his glory, even greater glory, because Paul just saw a little glimpse of it, and he was not fitted. While on earth, he fell to the ground and was overcome by it, but the Christian is going to be able to bask in the glory of God and the risen Christ someday. But as yet, as we now are in this world, and forever long we are in this world, we are going to be those who will not see Christ with the physical eye. And yet we love him. We believe on him. There are things that are real, though they are not seen with the physical eye. Christ is real, although today, and for the vast majority of the saints who have lived in the world at any time, we are not going to see Christ physically. All of those saints before, some of them here and there had little glimpses and met what was called the angel of the Lord, or a Christophany in the Old Testament, where the second person of the Trinity took on a physical appearance, like the Lord when he came to Abraham's tent. There's a few individuals, but the vast majority of saints, both in Old Testament and in New Testament times, are going to fall into this category of loving a Savior they have not seen with the physical eye. But this is the very essence of living faith. This is what it is to walk by faith. Twice over, Peter mentions this point: "Whom having not seen ye love," and then, "in whom though ye now ye see him not, yet believing ye rejoice." So he emphasizes it twice there in 1 Peter 1 and verse 8. We love him though we have not seen him. We rejoice in him though we have not seen him. And how different is that going to make the Christian then to the unconverted? The Christian is going to love Christ though they have not seen him. Will the world love Christ? The unconverted don't love Christ. The world doesn't love Christ. And one of the stumbling blocks is that they haven't seen him. And until they're given the gift of faith and their eyes are opened,
their spiritual eyes are open, that is, they'll never come to love Christ. But where that has taken place, and it has in the life of every individual who is converted, then there is going to be this very principle outworked. We're going to love a Christ we haven't seen. Now, to see the person that you love is very important. I was just noticing, I think it was this past week it was, where there's some sailors came home from, I think it was 2 years they've been away from home. British sailors. And part of that was because of COVID. And they haven't seen their loved ones in 2 years. Well, you can imagine what kind of a meeting that was going to be when loved ones hadn't seen each other in 2 years. There's something about seeing your loved one that you love. Seeing them physically, and even over COVID times when that wasn't possibly taking place, it was a trial for many. But what about loving a Christ you haven't seen? What about loving a Christ you haven't seen? That's the mark of faith. Though we haven't seen him, Peter says, you love him. You love him. Oh, he communicates with us, and we communicate with him. That's important. And when somebody's away and not physically been able to be seen, there's always been ways, letters and so on, even modern means now of maybe actually seeing the person when they're far away too. But it's important to communicate. Somebody who's away from home. And the Lord communicates with us. But all the time that he does, and we communicate with him in prayer as well, we do not see him. It is with the eye of faith that we see him. Turn over to Hebrews chapter 11. And here's an example of this outworking in somebody's life. And it's always important to see that, not just the principle and the theory of it in the scriptures, but is there examples how this actually works in practice in somebody's life? And here you have it in the life of Moses, Hebrews chapter 11. And verse 24, there's a section here that begins about Moses, his own life, how when he came to years, he refused to be called the son of Pharaoh's daughter, choosing rather to suffer affliction with the people of God than to enjoy the pleasures of sin for a season, esteeming the reproach of Christ greater riches than the treasures in Egypt, for he had respect unto the recompense of the reward. Here's the explanation coming in now with that four. There, halfway through verse 26, it tells us the certain things that he did, choices that he made. And now we're beginning to understand, well, why did he make those choices? One of them, there, verse 26, he had respect unto the recompense of the reward. He thought about the final harvest of it all. And then verse 27, by faith he forsook Egypt, not fearing the wrath of the king, for he endured as seeing him who is invisible. Here's another explanation given as to why Moses acted in the fashion that he did. First of all, he had respect unto the reward. That final day of reckoning. And again, Paul mentions in 2 Corinthians 5 about standing before the judgment seat of Christ. He's got that in mind as well. That final day of reckoning when we're going to stand before God. And Moses had a count of that, and he was prepared to give up everything that Egypt was offering him. And The common belief is that Moses was to be the next Pharaoh. That's why Pharaoh's daughter took him to be her son. She had no offspring. She had no heir. And she wanted a child to raise as she wanted, as she desired, so that he would become the heir to Pharaoh. And that's the common view among commentators, that Moses was to be the next Pharaoh. So he had all of Egypt on offer. He could have had it all, and Moses turned his back on it. Why? Because he had respect for that final day of judgment. And then it tells us as well, he endured as seeing him who is invisible. Because when reproach came upon him, and he had to forsake Egypt, because the wrath of the king was upon him, was he going to give up there? No, he endures. And he endures looking to the one whom he has not seen with a physical eye. And Christian, you and I are to do the same. We're not going to be in exactly the same circumstances as Moses, but the same principles are going to come to bear in our lives too. There's choices you and I have to make. And what are those choices going to be? Are they going to be along the lines of Scripture? We're going to have regard for the final day of judgment.
We're going to have regard for standing before God someday and answering to Him. And when that brings reproach, maybe even worse, persecution, are we going to endure because we've got our eye upon Him who is invisible? We see beyond the physical. We see the spiritual. That is what Peter is encouraging us to do. That is what Moses here is doing. That's what Paul has in mind when we come to this general principle in 2 Corinthians 5 and verse 7. But moving on, I want you to consider in the second place that the Christian is to set their affections upon things not seen. If you have 2 Corinthians there open before you, go to chapter 4 and verse 18. It's the last verse of the previous chapter. And there, this is really what starts Paul off on what he's saying here through this chapter 5. But here's the point that he's making in verse 18. While we look not at the things which are seen, but at the things which are not seen. For the things which are seen are temporal, but the things which are not seen are eternal. And if I could, before we just consider a little bit of that verse itself, let's go back one verse and take the context. Because that's going to point, we're going to pick up here on a similar point to what we noticed with regards to Moses. Because Paul is saying, for our light affliction. And that's how Paul is describing all the persecution that he suffered. And he suffered much. He lists it in the second book of 2 Corinthians. He suffered much. He was beaten, stoned, shipwrecked. He lists them all for us. And here he describes all of these things. He says, it's only light affliction. Even though I've suffered all of this, it's only light affliction. For our light affliction, which is but for a moment, worketh for us a far more exceeding and eternal weight of glory. Has Paul got his eye upon that final day of reward? Most certainly. And he's willing to endure so much. And he calls it just light affliction. He plays it down. He doesn't play it up that he has endured so much for the Lord. No, he says that this is just light affliction. In the light of what is yet to come, in the light of this glorious, exceeding and eternal weight of glory that is ours, this is only light affliction. And then, in verse 18, he explains the principle. And verse 18 really does tie in with chapter 5 and verse 7 in many ways, because he says, we look not at the things that are seen, but at the things which are unseen. The things which are seen are temporal, the things which are not seen are eternal. There's it in essence. Oh, in a nutshell, living by faith, walking by faith, means we're going to set our affections upon things not seen. Things that are eternal. And again, here's the divergence between the Christian and the world. We thought about it with respect to the person of Christ. Now we're going to think about it in things more general. The Christian's going to live for things that are eternal. That's how we're going to judge things. That's how we're going to judge what is important in this world. Is this something that is eternal, or is this something that's only temporal? And if it's temporal, then it's not worth much. It's not worth much. No matter how dear it is in the eyes of the world, it's not worth much if it's temporal. Because it's passing away. It's not going to last. Now the world might be taken up with this. And they are. This is what they count valuable. All their possessions and positions and popularity and pleasures and pastimes. That's all that they count important. Oh, they're of great value. All of those things are of great value to an unconverted soul, but should not be to a Christian. It's not that the Christian doesn't have possessions or positions or pastimes either, any of those things. It's not that the Christian lives totally apart from those, but those things are not important. That's the point. Those things are not important. And the reason they're not important is the principle that is laid down here in chapter 4 and verse 18. They're temporal. And if they're temporal, they're passing. They're all going to get burdened up with this world one day. When this world is going to be burdened, as Peter tells us, it's going to melt with fervent heat. It's going to be consumed. All of these things that are temporal are going to be consumed. But the Christian is to live for what is eternal. What is eternal? Again, can we take an example of this in the Scriptures? Turn away back to 2 Kings 5 this time, please. And let's think about Gehazi, the servant of Elisha. And in this chapter, 2 Kings chapter 5, it's the healing of Naaman. And you'll remember that Naaman offered Elisha, any amount of material reward for what he had done, but Elisha wouldn't take anything off him, and there was a principle in that. You cannot buy God's favor, ever. And Naaman thought he could. God's favor is taken as a gift. As we know, salvation is a gift. The cleansing that Naaman experiences is a picture of salvation and can't be bought, can't be paid for. So Elisha's not going to take any payment for it whatsoever. But his servant had a greedy eye, Gehazi. And after Naaman had taken his leave of Elisha, we read there that it starts at verse 20, 2 Kings chapter 5 and verse 20. We're not going to read these verses down just for sake of time, but I'm sure it's a well-known, familiar portion. But down through those verses, you read that Gehazi followed after Naaman, and Naaman saw him coming and stopped his chariot and got down to meet him and greet him and ask him what he wanted. And Gehazi, in verse 22, told him a lie, spun him a yarn, in order to get out of him some possessions. And Naaman, he was very happy. He gave him even more than he asked for. And Gehazi, verse 24, came back and hid them in the tower. And then he went in to Elisha, and Elisha said to him, well, where were you, Gehazi? Verse 25. And Gehazi tried to play it down, but verse 26, Elisha said, my heart went with you. Well, it's in the form of a question. Went not mine heart with thee when the man turned again from his chariot to meet thee? In other words, did I not know all that was taking place? After all, Elisha is a prophet, and God speaks to the prophet. And the Lord has told Elisha all that his servant Gehazi has been doing. But look at the statement that Elisha makes at verse 26. Again, it's in the form of a question. And the Lord often communicates his truth in that fashion, because that demands, you see, then, that you and I respond. If you're asked a question, you're expected to answer. Somebody makes a statement, well, you can just brush it off and walk on. But if somebody asks you a question, you're kind of obliged to answer it. There's a greater onus upon you to think what was said. So there's a question that is asked. And Elisha says to Gehazi, is it a time to receive money and to receive garments and olive yards and vineyards and sheep and oxen and men servants and maid servants? Is this the time to pursue those things, Gehazi? Now, there's nothing wrong with those things in and of themselves. The key is it a time to receive it, or is it a time to pursue these things? Is this what you live for? Do you just live for the temporal? Is that all that is of interest to you, Gehazi? Because he had missed the significance of Elisha refusing to take payment for what had been done to Naaman. He had missed the significance of that. And there is a significance in it, but he has missed that because he is so taken up with the temporal, and he can't miss an opportunity to make material gain. And the question is left there. Well, we have to answer it. Is this the time, Christian, then? We have to answer that today. Even now, we have to answer that honestly before the Lord. Is this the time? Is this day and age that you and I live in, as we are in the world today, is this what is important? The pursuing of money and garments and olive yards and vineyards and sheep and oxen and men servants and maid servants, is this what is important? Well, when you come over to where we are this morning, 2 Corinthians 4 and verse 18, certainly it's not important to Paul. Now, as I say, there's nothing wrong with having those things if the Lord gives them to somebody. That's not the point. The point is, it is the pursuit of them. It is the living for them. Is this all that is important? Is this the only thing that matters, and it takes precedent over everything else? That's the important point. That's where it's wrong. If that's the only thing that is important, because the Christian is to live for things that are eternal. That's what is important to a Christian. And that ought to be seen in a Christian's life. As somebody observes a Christian, if they watch to an unsaved man or an unsaved woman and a saved man or a saved woman, if they were to watch them together, they have to see a difference.
There's one of them who's going to live with his priority and her priority for the things of this world. There's another who's going to live with his or her priority is going to be eternal things. The Lord comes first and the things of God come first. And if there's a clash, it will be the things of God that takes precedent. These are the things that we have not seen, but that we live for. And if we walk by faith, then this is how it's going to manifest itself. It's not a little theory that's away back at the back of our mind that's never in play every day in our life, Christian. That's not how it is. Bible religion is practical religion. It's everyday religion. And yes, there are doctrines and positions that we take and certain things, but it affects what we do every day. It affects how we think every day. So the Christian is going to set their affections upon things they have not seen. And you'll remember Paul saying that something similar to that very quickly before we move on to one final point. In Colossians chapter 3, verse 1 and 2, "If ye then be risen with Christ, seek those things which are above, where Christ sitteth on the right hand of God. Set your affections on things above, not on things on the earth." Colossians 3, 1 and 2. So the Christian's going to live for eternal things. And when that is seen in a Christian's life, then it can be said, there's a Christian that's walking by faith. There has to be the evidence of this. We can't say, oh, we're walking by faith, and that's not the case. There's no evidence to support that statement. When we living for the eternal, then we can say we're walking by faith. One final thought. The Christian is to have a hope that is built upon a living faith. You see, the Bible tells us that hope is something that remains in this world. You think of that well-known statement in 1 Corinthians 13, faith, hope, and charity. The greatest of these is charity. But what did that verse also say? It says that these things remain. There remaineth faith, hope, and charity. There are things that are going to pass away. 1 Corinthians 13, the earlier verses, tells us that. Knowledge will pass away and prophecies will pass away. Those gifts that were apostolic gifts, the same way as the office of an apostle has passed away, so the gifts that were marking the apostolic office are going to pass away as well. Surely that's understandable. Our charismatic friends don't seem to understand that. But then they claim that you can be an apostle today as well, some of them at least. But there are things that are going to pass away, but there are things that will remain, that will never pass away. And three of them are given: faith, hope, and charity. Those are three things that are to mark our existence in this world. Because if you turn to Romans chapter 8 and verse 14, and here's the significance of this. Romans chapter 8, verses 24 and 25, it says, "We are saved by hope, but hope that is seen is not hope. For what a man seeth, why doth he yet hope for? But if we hope for that we see not, then do we with patience wait for it." Romans 8, 24, 25. So there's this thought here about living by faith, not by sight. There's something we haven't seen as yet, but we hope for it. We hope for it. We're hoping for something we have not seen. This is one of the Christian graces that is to manifest itself while we're in this world. Faith, hope, and charity. And we're picking up there on the middle one. The Christian is to have the Christian grace of hope. What is hope as a Christian grace? It is a confident expectation about eternal salvation. For example, we read about the hope of the gospel. We read about the hope of salvation. We read the hope of your calling, the hope of glory, the hope of eternal life. You will come upon all of those statements in the Bible, in the New Testament. There is a hope that the Christian has. And when we speak about that, we're speaking about a confident expectation of eternal glory. There is something I believe and you believe is going to happen to us at the end. We're not going to go down into hell. We're going upwards to glory. We're going to be with Christ. We're going to see Christ. We're going to be like Christ. This is our hope. But this is something that is to characterize us down here, because as Paul argues there in Romans 8, verse 25, how can you hope for that which you've already seen? So there's no hope and glory in that sense. Hope has been realized. The reality has come to pass. The experience of it has been reached. So therefore, you don't hope for eternal glory once you get to heaven. You've realized it. You hope for it down here.
while you have not seen it, while you have not laid eyes on it. And again, that thought is in Romans 8, 24 and 25, because in both verses, Paul is bringing in this thought here about having not seen this. But hope that is seen is not hope, for what a man seeth, why doth he yet hope for? But if we hope for that we see not, and there's the point, we hope for that we see not. We have a confident expectation about something we have not seen. We haven't seen heaven. We have read about heaven. We have read in various places, certainly in the book of the Revelation, about the New Jerusalem. What's it like? A wonderful subject to study and think about. Even more so if those who are dear to us are there. Wouldn't we want to know what type of place heaven is? But we haven't seen it. We haven't seen it as yet. But we have a confident expectation that we will. We believe it. We believe it to the point where it's going to influence our lives, where it's going to dictate our lives. It's not just something there again, as I say, at the back of our mind. Oh, it's there, but it doesn't have any bearing upon me from day to day. That's not living by hope. That's not living by walking by faith. If I believe in heaven, if I believe I'm going to be there, then that needs to dictate what I do every day of my life. And you too. It has to. It has to. Now, I want you to, well, maybe you have Romans 8 open in front of you. I want you to pick up on the word if there, because I think it's worth explaining that word in this context. Because it's not introducing doubt. It's not introducing doubt. That's how we might use the word today, if. And once you use if, everybody thinks, oh, there's some doubt in this. I'm going to do such and such if. Well, then it's conditional. But there's actually, well, I'll say there's at least two ways. The English teachers or who know English better than me might say there's more than this, but there's at least two ways in which you can understand the word if and use the word if, and the Bible uses it in more than one way. And here it is used in the sense of the word since. Maybe if we put that word in, we would understand it, because this is what it means actually. And because if you read those two verses, we are saved by hope, but hope that is not seen is not hope. For what a man seeth, why doth he yet hope for? But since we hope for that we see not, then do we with patience wait for it. Maybe that brings out the full sense of what is here. Since we hope for that we see not, then do we with patience wait for it. You see, it is a certainty. The if is not introducing a doubt here, that somehow this is in doubt that we're going to see heaven. That's certain. Jesus Christ has made it certain. If he has saved us, then he's going to keep us and he's going to present us before his Father, unblameable and unreprovable in his sight. It's sure, it's certain. And because it's sure and certain, then the rest of the verse says, then with patience do we wait for it. The Christian is going to be seen living in patience. There's going to be many things that will try your patience in this world. And I started off by saying, there's things in this world that will vex you. And the longer this world goes on, the more we will be vexed. But with patience do we endure it. I'll show you another place where that same principle needs to apply. Because sometimes those who deny the eternal preservation and of the saints turn up this verse. Colossians, let's turn over to Colossians and the first chapter very quickly. Colossians chapter 1, verses 22 and 23. And where you come upon the word if, you need to understand it in the sense of since. Colossians 1, 22. In the body of his flesh. Well, we better take in verse 21 then to get the whole sentence. And you who were sometime alienated and enemies in your mind by wicked works, yet now hath he reconciled in the body of his flesh through death to present you holy and unblameable and unreprovable in his sight. This is our hope. We've been cleansed, reconciled to God. We're going to be someday glorified and presented to the Father. But then look at verse 23, and here's the if. And again, I suggest to you that if you just think about the word since And it's perfectly acceptable to use the English word if in this way, but maybe we're not so much used to that today in our usage. But if we just put that in, since ye continue in the faith, grounded and settled, and be not moved away from the hope of the gospel, which ye have heard, and which was preached to every creature, which is under heaven, whereof I, Paul, am made a minister. You see, there's a statement in verse 21 and 22 of what Christ will do for us, has done, and will yet do for us. And then, verse 23 is the impact that this is going to have on your and my life every day. We're going to continue in the faith, grounded and settled. The Christian's going to be grounded and settled. They're not going to be blown about by every wind of doctrine that comes along. They're going to know the truth. They're going to hold fast to the truth. And they're going to say, here I stand, because this is what the Bible teaches me with regards to my hope. We're not going to be moved away from the hope of the gospel. So again, Christian, it has a practical outbearing. What it is to walk by faith, that's going to be seen every day in our lives. And it is important that we do not think that somehow what we believe is tucked away in the back of our mind, and yes, we're orthodox and all the rest of it, we tick all the boxes, but when I go out on a Monday morning to do whatever I need to do, it has no bearing upon my life. That is not right. That is not Bible religion. What I believe and what you believe, what the Bible teaches us, has a bearing what we do Monday, Tuesday, Wednesday, Thursday, Friday, Saturday, as well as what we do on a Sunday. It impacts every day of our life. And if it doesn't, there's something wrong. It's practical religion. We walk by faith and not by sight. And may the Lord help us by his grace to do so.